Yours to Protect is a unique and exciting audio project that Midlands 103 and indeed other radio stations are embarking on over the next year. And our aim is to explore a lot of themes and provide advice, but also questioning and factual and honest reporting in environmental matters and how carbon is counted. And one of the questions to kick off our discussion is whether people feel that we in Ireland are doing enough or indeed too much in the global context of climate change. And here's what people on the street have had to say today.
I don't really think Ireland's doing enough. I feel like for a country that's known as the green country, we don't utilise a lot of power sources such as the sun or wind and stuff like that. And then when I do see things like that being put in, there seems to be quite a bit of community uproar about them. And I know they can be noisy and stuff, but I feel like if the government took enough initiatives to make them work, put them in places that maybe wouldn't be disruptive, I think it could be a viable way to go about the crisis.
To be honest with you, I don't think they're doing as much as they should be doing. That's my opinion anyway. I don't really know what the state of the other countries are. I wouldn't say it's too great. I do my own bit. I have my kids, my wife, we all do our recycling. Been doing that now since day one anyway, you know. So once I'm doing my own little bit, and I think if everyone does their own, we'd be a lot better off.
I think we're making our effort. I think actually, I suppose you've got that whole controversy with the whole Bordnemon and the turf thing at the moment. You know that? You can see how it's kind of had an effect on some of the tower towns. Other than that, though, I suppose we're making our effort in our own way, yeah. I wouldn't really be too much of an expert on it myself. But I got my first car this year, so that probably didn't help, but I walk as much as I can, basically, do you know what I mean? That's about, and when we recycle and stuff like that, that's the best I can sort of say, really.
Yeah, we're not doing too bad. Some countries do nothing at all. And we're such a small country. No, we're a tiny country. Well, strict rules here. Look, we were the first smoking man in the world, but I gave up cigarettes. Now, my wife would be much more keener than I would be, but I do my bit. She's in for keeping insects, you know, this little thing in the garden, and no weed killer or stuff all like this. I wish we'd vary that much.
I think we have our head in the sand a little bit in comparison to other countries. Like, I know we've cut down on fossil fuel usage and everything, but it's still a massive thing for our culture in Ireland. So that's a hard one, especially with the older generation. But I think we need to do a lot more than we're doing at the moment. I'm working in Dublin, and I kind of attempt to get the train every day rather than driving. There is parking at work, but it's just easier on the train in regards to climate change. It's just a better option. I think maybe more incentives to incentivise certain things. Obviously, they brought the price of the train down, which was great. But they'll kind of keep going down that route of incentivising things that kind of are more beneficial to the environment. We're a huge agricultural society, and I know a lot of people are going vegan and there's different options for people, but it is a difficult one.
So a mixture of views captured on the streets of the Midlands this morning. Let's tease this out a little further. Caroline Hoffman joins us from The Cube, which is a low-carbon centre of excellence in Portlaoise. Good morning.
Good morning, Will.
Also, Jack O'Sullivan, an environmental and planning consultant with Environmental Management Services based here in the Midlands. Morning.
Good morning, Will. Nice to be here again.
We had invited some other voices as well, including, for instance, Deputy Carol Nolan, who has expressed some reservations about aspects of climate policy. Unfortunately, she wasn't in a position to join us. Caroline, tell us a little bit about Portlaoise and the ambition to become Ireland's first low-carbon town.
So we have a 2040 strategy for Portlaoise, and we've been designated our carbon town. And as part of that, we got a carbon footprint study in 2021, and that was the first ever commissioned for a county town in Ireland. And that was in collaboration with Siemens. And in that, they found that Portlaoise town emits 100,000 tonnes of CO2 per annum. The majority of that is residential, then closely followed by commercial.
Mm.
So part of the ecosystem of that, I suppose, is the Cube Low Carbon Centre of Excellence, where I'm MD. And we're looking to work with businesses, with communities, on how to become more sustainable, how to decarbonise. We all have a duty, and listening to the Vox Pop, even the little things make a huge difference. Ireland was the first, you know, to implement a smoking ban. We also brought in the plastic bag levies, and eventually those were pretty much eradicated for bags for life. So those little things do add up. Unfortunately, when it comes to things like electric cars, and I had the conversation with Jack outside before we came in, the infrastructure just isn't there. And part of what we're looking at as part of the Portlaoise 2040 plan is to build that infrastructure to reduce the reliance on cars in the town, so make it more bike friendly. For example, there's a cycle bus where school children cycle to school on a Friday, which is fantastic, and that reduces the number of cars in the town. We're also looking at rooftop solar PV, introducing more wind energy. For example, I think in 21, our energy we created, I think, through 28% of electricity needs in Ireland came through wind energy. That's what we produced, which is very positive. Retrofitting is going to have a big part there as well. And also biodiversity projects. The Tidy Towns have been stellar in that. They had their launch a number of weeks ago in the Cube with a biodiversity strategy for the town and also the wider county, which is very positive.
So you've captured your baseline some years ago, and now you'll be able to monitor over time whether the measures you've described are making an impact. Let me be the doubting Thomas in the room, Jack. Electric cars, for instance. If you measure them solely at the tailpipe, yes, they are cleaner. Mm-hmm. You have to consider, though, where does the electricity come from? What's the environmental impact of mining the lithium and so on? So perhaps that's why some people feel a little bit bamboozled in making the right choices.
Well, that's also a very good reason for why we should be moving away from the personal car and into public transport. It was lovely to hear Carlan talk about Portlaoise. That's a really, really positive story. And the one thing Portlaoise has is a railway line. No, you can get to several places. Why not get from Tullamore to Portlaoise by rail? Wouldn't that be a nice little initiative for the government to do? And even from Tullamore to Mullingar by rail would be our Galway to Mullingar. That was the case some years ago, and rail is the most efficient method of transportation in energy terms. It's easily electrified, and when a train slows down, when the brakes go on, it feeds current back into the system.
But let's head to your home county. So in Westmeath, the former rail line, for instance, connecting Athlone and Mullingar,
is gone.
Is now a greenway.
I know. And it's very nice for people to cycle along it. But if you're a student in Athlone Regional College, now it's the Technological University of the Shannon, and you want to go there from Mullingar, you can cycle 42 kilometres if you want to, but otherwise you've got to buy a car. There are occasional buses, but they don't suit everyone. So our public transport system in Ireland is nowhere near as good as many other smaller countries in Europe. And I think that's one area the government needs to push very strongly. Now, Caroline didn't mention transportation emissions. That's important too as well, because if you look at the design of our towns, take Mullingar, with which I'm more familiar, and Tullamore is the same. If you live in the outskirts of these towns, how do you get into the centre? There is very little good public transport. If we want to get, say we live in north of Mullingar, if we want to get to Dublin, which is nice to do for music or theatre, we can't come back by train. The last train leaves at 7 o'clock in the evening. So we have to drive both ways. So really the public transport system needs to be upgraded seriously and electrified in every single direction.
So well, Caroline mentioned, for instance, solar and wind. And here in Ireland, okay, short days during the winter might limit solar, but wind is pretty consistent.
It is.
And there are many examples of onshore wind in the Midlands. Offshore, we've had the recent auction. So how far are we from becoming energy independent with wind and renewables?
A long way, but we're moving fast now at last. I think one of the things that the government didn't do very well initially, but it's changing now, is to literally give wind energy to large companies rather than to small groups of farmers, villages. If you look, for example, at Denmark, 50% of all the wind energy in Denmark is owned by communities. Here, it's big companies moving in and people are resisting that. They don't want the wind turbines for some reason or another. And yet there are many places where the wind turbines are excellent, like Mount Lucas just down the road from here. So that's one thing. The other thing we've been very slow on is developing wind turbines on the offshore sandbanks right down the east coast of Ireland, literally from Dublin, the Kish Bank, all through the Arklow Bank, down as far as Cahor Point. Those areas are relatively sheltered. Most of our winds come from the west. There's not a big wave action. The sea is shallow. The very first structure built in the sea that was stabilized by gravity, by its own weight in the world, was the Kish Bank Lighthouse off Dublin Bay. So we have the possibility of doing that, but we're very slow.
One missing piece of the puzzle then is to harness that power in batteries so that when the wind slackens, when the sun goes in, there is a stable supply to the grid.
Yes.
And we're looking at developing these big battery storage facilities. But again, critics will say that batteries, because they have to be mined and the materials used in them, it's one form of evil versus another. And which is the lesser of the two?
Well, I think the lesser of the two is to actually build the batteries. We have a battery in our house. It's a lithium battery. There's no other choice. We've had it now since 2019, and it works very well, because on all these days, we're not only exporting electricity to the grid and getting paid for it, which is really lovely, but the battery has kept us going right up to 11 or midnight at night. Now that's fantastic. I'm looking at the system we have, more or less. I look at it every day because I'm very curious, and I see 11 o'clock at night, I might pop into the office, and we're feeding off the battery, not off the grid. So big batteries, they are problematical. They are difficult material. The lithium is very hard to get. It's mined in countries where the regimes are not so great, and it hurts a lot of people to do that mining. On the other hand, how can we store electricity? There are two other ways. We have a pumped storage scheme in Ireland. It's been there for several decades. Turlough Hill in County Wicklow. During the daytime, we can pump water up into that elevated lake, and at night, we pump it up, and at daytime we let it come down again through the turbines. It's not 100% efficient, may only be 75% efficient. Another way of doing it, strange as this might seem, is to have in a power station an enormous flywheel weighing several tens of tons, spinning at an enormous speed, and the kinetic energy of that is huge. So you speed it up at the time when electricity is cheap, say windy night or like today, lots and lots of solar energy, and then it will power the system as when the electricity is needed. But a problem we have here right through Ireland is our grid is not really set up for multiple small producers of electricity. When I say small, it could be a 10-acre wind solar farm. It could be a couple of wind turbines in a village. But we have difficulties so in doing that. I went to see one of the only community-owned wind farms in Ireland, in Tipperary. Two wind turbines built by a community and great people. But you know what happened to them? What they wanted to do, that 200 or 300 people living in that area, they wanted to use electricity to feed their own homes. And they'd pay back, I think it cost about $2 million to build. They would pay it back over a couple of years. They couldn't get permission to connect to the grid until they had made a cast iron arrangement to sell the electricity to a big company.
Mm.
So now they're getting nothing, none of it themselves. They're paying like the rest of us. So the financial system is not good. The grid system is not good. It's improving.
Yes, and there is going to be hopefully this excess of corporate tax receipts in which we can invest in the grid and in other infrastructure over the years ahead.
Yeah.
Let's come back to businesses. And I know you mentioned, Caroline, that residential, in Portlaoise at least, was one of the bigger emitters. But commercially, what are businesses doing to play their part?
Well, I know we touched on transportation, and Martley's is one such company in Portlaoise, and they have electric buses. And I know they're looking to develop a route between Dublin and Portlaoise as well, looking at electric coaches. And we've been pushing for an electric bus depot where eventually these buses will be able to stop. They'll be able to have their rest break, recharge. And that would be great because Portlaoise is such a hub at the moment with all the buses stopping there. And that's part of the 2040 plan as well. Just very quickly as well, I'd like to mention that Airgrid, they have a website, smartgriddashboard.com, where we can look at our energy needs and requirements on a day-to-day basis and what we're producing in terms of wind turbine energy. So that's worth looking at as well. It's very interesting. There's other businesses, you know, throughout the town, they're using solar PV, they're utilising the roofs, and that's something we'd really like to see as part of the 2040 plan as well. And we're starting to see residential properties carrying on that trend as well. In terms of the Cube, we provide training and consultancy services. The local enterprise office are very active with their Green Start and Green for Micro programmes, where they offer a green consultant to help you on that journey. The SAAI also offer a voucher to look at an energy audit for your premises, mm-hmm. which is a really good starting point. For example, there's low-hanging fruit like energy efficient lighting. Fluorescent lighting is going to be banned from September in the EU, so now's the time to look at that and change your lighting. There is an investment, but you will see payback over time, and you will see not only energy benefits but also a reduction in your bills as well, so everyone wins.
And in your experience, is the buy-in because of the economic incentive, the payback on the fluorescent bulbs, for instance, or is it corporate social responsibility? Or is it to some degree
both? It's a combination of both, really, Will, to be honest. You know, people are far more cognizant, particularly younger generations now. You know, ecotourism is such a big thing now as well, and just transition funding will contribute to that. But I know certainly businesses, if you're looking to tender, sustainability is something you need to talk about in that tender document, be it your suppliers or what you're doing on the ground. And I know from speaking with businesses in the Cube, they have people, their project managers, looking to develop their CSR and ESG strategies. So it's very important, and they want to get ahead of the curve for 2030 as well to meet those targets.
When you talk about consumer demands, so that's reflected in what sort of sectors? I know fast fashion, for instance, is going out of fashion.
Yeah, look, it's a huge pollutant, unfortunately, and that's something we're very cognizant of. And I think we've all seen documentaries about it and the impact it has. The old reduce, reuse, recycle, we're being cognizant of that. You know, even your keep cups now, using that in the coffee shop and getting a discount. Sometimes it's an element nearly of nudge theory. And I know on the Vox Pop again, somebody mentioned incentives, and it is about incentivizing people, and then eventually they'll see the benefits for themselves.
Glass half full or glass half empty? So you mentioned Just Transition Fund, and there are some who have expressed very strongly their view that Ireland has given up its peat industry far too easily, especially when those products are being imported now from overseas and the carbon footprint of that transport. But on the other hand, are there genuine opportunities in this new, cleaner world that we strive to create? And what might those job opportunities look like for the Midlands, Jack?
I think there are terrific opportunities, and it's sad that it's taking so long to get them going. I remember about 4 years ago going to a seminar in Tullamore organised by an MEP, and he was saying that Europe is giving huge amounts of transition funding, initially to countries like parts of Poland where the coal industry had to be wiped out, and this money was available too for Ireland. And there was a man there from the trade union movement who spoke very well, and there was a man from Bordna Mona who said nothing. Now I think Bordna Mona's changing, and what I'd love to see, and it can be done, Bordna Mona said they're changing from a peat production company to a company which is going to be involved in mitigating climate change.
They call it their brown to green strategy.
And how can this happen? It's actually quite easy, because the very best ecosystem that can grab that carbon dioxide and lock it up for thousands of years is a living bog. The kind of bog you walk out in that's all soft and green, and you pull up this big fistful of sphagnum and you squeeze the water out of it. Our bogs could be made like that again. It means re-wetting them, blocking the drains. And an idea I had a couple of years ago was, when you have re-wetted and there's a little drop of water on the surface, give work to people to go out and plant that sphagnum. Don't just wait until nature slowly takes over. Grab sphagnum from other bogs where it's plentiful, plant it, and in a while you'll get that carbon sequestration happening. Then you've got.
Let me butt in again, sorry.
Yes.
Because re-wetting and even planting the moss, that's a temporary project. Building wind farms, temporary work.
Yes.
Once they're up and running,
yes,
there's less maintenance on them, certainly less than the bogs required. So we've had huge job displacement. How do we get those numbers back?
It's going to be very hard to get those numbers back, because even if you re-wet the bogs using a lot of manpower and woman power, and you put in two or three interpretative centres, which I think are essential, because if any of us have kids and their kids say, Daddy or Mammy, what was this bog thing? What were people doing? Where's all this machinery Ireland is supposed to have invented? So good that even the Finnish people were coming to look at it. Unless we can keep that in interpretive centres and show people what it was like, then that part of our history will be lost. Now, that will give a little bit of employment, but nothing like the hundreds that were employed before. I'm not sure how the same level of employment can be achieved. I know a lot of it can be achieved with tourism, with managing nature, and the people who know best are those who worked on the bogs themselves. Mm. But I can't see the quite the numbers coming back. That change is normal anyway. If you think about the thousands of people at typewriters only 50 years ago, and another generation before that, we had hundreds of thousands of people copying by hand, doing accounts in writing. So all that changes, and these changes will continue all the time.
Let's come back to households. And they were top of your list for carbon offenders, in Portlaoise at least, Caroline. And a lot of comment about heating systems, for instance, and air to water, and whether if you don't have a modern house that is properly insulated, whether you end up paying more. But what was the gist of the findings in Portlaoise? Why were households at the top of the list of carbon emitters?
Because of the BER rating, really. There's a lot of older properties there that need to be retrofitted well. So that's why solar PV has such an important part to play. And it can actually meet over 40% of your energy needs per year just from solar PV. And there's simple things as well, you know, turning off your lights and that. It all accumulates and we're feeling it in our pockets as well.
But solar PV, you need, while there is a grant, you need a cash pile to install.
There's also the banks and the credit unions are also offering loans in that space. There are lower interest rates available for green projects. So whether you want to retrofit your home, and I'm conscious there is an outlay there, but you will see the benefits over a number of years and you will get payback. So for solar PV, it's approximately 5 years and you will get a lower interest rate. And the same interest rate is available there for electric vehicles as well. And there's obviously grants as well to get electric charging points in your home. And it's also worth looking at cheaper electricity times as well. So you can actually time that your electricity is used at less pressure points, I suppose.
Heat pumps are getting a lot of hate, Jack. Why?
Heat? Mm. I don't know why that. Well, in our house, we don't have a heat pump because we built ours in 2010, 2011. And heat pumps were expensive and not very efficient. We have instead a wood-burning stove because that's very cheap to run. Even though it does emit carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, we're very much aware of that. But we have solar panels on our roof, two types, the evacuated tubes, which heat water, and the solar PV, which provides electricity. But if I was doing it today, I'd probably go for a heat pump and solar photovoltaic, because the heat pumps are very much more efficient now. They're 4 to 1. So for every kilowatt hour you power the heat pump with, you get 4 kilowatt hours of heat out of it. So they're very, very good. The problem with all of these, and I think Caroline has pointed it out, is the high cost of the high initial cost. The only way I could think that some of our financial institutions could help is, let's say, for example, a family has €200 electricity bill every 2 months, and it goes down to €120 once they've got the solar PV. Now that saves €80 a month. How long could they pay off, even give them a little bit of help financially at maybe zero interest rate, to pay off the cost of installing a heat pump and or solar photovoltaic? That should be possible. So there's no initial big cost. The big initial cost is paid for over maybe 10 or 15 years, like a mortgage, by the reduction in electricity bills which they will get from the installation.
Caller points out VAT has been abolished on the installation of solar panels for homes, which is a
good
recent measure.
Good.
And then you've the grant on top of it. So that improves payback time, but you still need that bit of a nest egg to begin with. A final theme, and this always comes up when we discuss climate change, is the feeling of futility, that we in Ireland are but a blip in the global emissions, and China, India, many countries in Africa that aspire to better living standards will develop in the way we did in, unfortunately, polluting and coal plants and all of these other hazards to the environment.
Well, instead of looking at those big countries, let's look at smaller countries like Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Slovenia. Countries like that, which are like us, even smaller. And the countries in the EU are progressing quite quickly. And one of the things I've noticed watching and reading a lot of what's happening around Europe is, in those countries, towns are taking the initiative And this is why it was great to hear Caroline describe how Port Laoise was taking the initiative, because governments often move much more slowly than individual municipalities, where the mayor of a town might have a lot of responsibility. They're in charge of their own sewage, in charge of their own water, in charge of their own roads. Now, that's not the situation here in Ireland, unfortunately. We're very centralised, but we can still do quite a lot. And if you think about it like this, the best way of capturing carbon is a peat bog, much better than a forest. So we can do our bit in comparison to our size. And I think Caroline mentioned we were the first country to ban smoking. We can leap ahead. So we're very, very good in a lot of ways. It's just that I think the government is influenced too much by industrial lobbying. The Consumer Protection Commission a couple of years ago reported that, for example, the Irish government has given the control of waste almost entirely to the industry. Now, that's not great, because the industry will do whatever is most profitable. In Slovenia, for example, there's only one waste management company owned by the state. Within about 2 years, they transformed the entire thing, and they have a huge, very high proportion of recycling, far more than we do. And the other thing we could be doing too as well is installing deposit return systems.
Yes, we are going to have that for bottles and cans soon.
It's been promised years ago. Yes. But the industry is against it, quietly lobbying against this, I know from consultation I've had with the department.
Final words to you, Caroline, because again, you're of a generation that is going to be very much affected by this. So what do you take heart from?
We all have a part to play, no matter how small we think it is. At an EU level, we obviously have to meet our 2030 targets and eventually our 2050 targets. But it's really important we get started now. It's never too late. And what I'd say also, the Cube is very much open to businesses, to communities, to people who are homeowners looking to retrofit their homes. Engage with us, see what's available there, and we'll put you in touch with the relevant people and make sure that you get the best advice and the information on grants that are available.
It's a lovely shiny building, it's worth taking a look.
It is. It's a great space, and look, we're very fortunate that the first and second floor, we have two companies based there, so there's also job creation as an element of it. And with the Port Laoise low carbon town as well, I'd go back to that we'd hope to be a demonstrator town, not only nationally but also internationally, so other towns and other parts of the world can learn from us and what we've done.
Be an exemplar indeed. Caroline Hoffman is the Managing Director of The Cube, the Low Carbon Centre of Excellence in Port Laoise. Jack O'Sullivan, an Environmental and Planning Consultant with Environmental Management Services in County Westmeath. Thank you both very much for your time.
And you
can follow Ours to Protect at ourstoprotect.ie as a one-stop shop for information on how you can play your part.